My name is Kathy Hunter Cook. I teach at Sioux Falls Christian first grade in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. We have a conference much like this at Dort University the first week of October. And so Brenda reached out and asked for us to do this math fact fluency presentation. So here I am presenting to you. This is my family. My husband Matt and I have been married for 11 years. He's an actuary, so when he heard I was presenting on something to do with math, he was all for that because he does math all day, every day. My daughter Jordan is 8. She is in second grade. My son Breck is 6 and in kindergarten. And my daughter Cassidy is 4 and a half, almost 5, and she is in preschool. So I'm going to have you start thinking about what fluency means. And in my first, I've been teaching at Sioux Falls Christian for 14 years. In my first few years, the other first grade teachers did rocket math. I don't know if you're familiar with rocket math, the 1 minute time test. And so being a beginning teacher, I was like, okay, and went along with it. But I also have anxiety when it comes to tests like that, and just really wrestled with what to do, because I didn't love rocket math, and I didn't love the thought that my students could be experiencing those same feelings that I felt as a student growing up. So that's where this began. So we're going to pass out a time test to you to get us started. So please wait to start until I press the timer. Done this? we would have required it to be silent, right? There was a lot of talking and laughing going on because we know this isn't real, right? But can you see how this would have induced anxiety in some of our students? And even if they had understanding of skills like I did, having a timed test would have caused those skills to fly out the window, right? Because I could tell you how to solve the problems, but once that time restraint was put on, it left my brain. So we're going to talk about a new way to approach math fact fluency based on the research and the kit that was developed by a man named Graham Fletcher. He is a first grade teacher himself, so just really appreciated that as a first grade teacher that he truly knew where I went or where I was at, because I feel like sometimes when you get these things, it's really great for 3, 4, 5, or it's really great for middle school and high school, and the, you know, primary grades are just kind of like left there with nothing, right? Or like, but where do we start to get there? So when you were looking at those numbers, were you, or when you did a time test, when you were in school, or when you gave them to students, did you encourage yourself or your students to think about the relationships between the numbers? Did they make connections across different number combinations? Or did you have to always do it just in isolation? Okay. So this quote says, the issue here is not whether facts should be eventually be memorized, but how this memorization is achieved. By drill, practice, and memorization, or by focusing on the relationship. And that's what the Building Math Fact Fluency Kit really hones in on, is the relationship. And I've just been blown away that my six-year-olds, even this week before I left to come here, the conversations that were coming out of them and the relationships with numbers that were being made. You'll see a picture later, but I stopped them and I said, guys, I have to take a picture of this to use it when I'm going to teach these other teachers, because I just couldn't believe the depth that they were going with this one problem in the way that it had been presented to them. So here's our order of operations. We'll talk a little bit about what I've learned, model some things for you, talk about the implementation and the assessment, and then sharing of some resources. So psychologists have long known that the people more easily learn a body of knowledge by focusing on its structure, the patterns, the relationship. We're a TFT school at Sioux Falls Christian. We have changed a few of the through line verbiage, but we call ourselves order discoverers. So we talk a lot about how God is a God of order and how we can be order discoverers when we look at math and see those patterns in the relationship instead of just memorizing facts by rote. So it really does a great job of pulling on what they already know and building off of that and taking the relationships and truly having a really strong foundation. So fluency can be described as four things: accuracy, efficiency, flexibility, and then ultimately the appropriate use of strategy. I'll share my slides at the end too. I'm good with pictures, but just in case you want them. Let's try that again. Here we go. Okay, so five basic fact fundamentals. I'm not on the same screen as you. Let's see. We're always up for an adventure. Sometimes my students like to say when my smart board isn't working, Mrs. Hunter Cook, I don't think your smart board's being very smart right now. We can say that here too. Okay, so mastery, ultimately is what our goal is, right? We want these kids to master these facts and their understanding of these numbers, relationships, but mastery must focus on fluency. Fluency develops in three stages, and the fundamental facts must perceive derived facts. And ultimately, the research is showing that time tests do not assess fluency. You may or not have already figured that out yourself by now, right? They don't really show you what your student truly knows and understands. They need sustainable and enjoyable practice. Okay. So activities and assessments. Rely a lot of accuracy and efficiency, but there's two more steps that go with it. So the three stages that fluency develops in is counting, either mentally or with objects, deriving, which is using strategies based on known facts, which is where building fact fluency goes to, leads to, you're working on that deriving, and then mastery of automatic efficiently producing the answer, and the games that he has developed lead to that. I used it this summer, these games a lot when I tutored struggling first graders going into second grade, and the repetitive practice really made a big difference. The format, the structure of the games that I'll show you in a little bit stay the same, so that your working memory can really focus on the skill and not how to play the game. The difference between phase two, deriving, and phase three, mastery, is the speed. So students need to have sufficient amount of time and experience in phase two to be able to reach phase three. A lot of quick fix programs take students from phase one, counting, straight to phase three, mastery. This is where the students know it on Friday and forget it by Monday. So it starts, the first step is automaticity. He starts, and a lot of fluency foundations start with plus or minus zero, plus or minus one, plus or minus two, and then once that foundation is set, you can then go into doubles and combinations of 10 and moving on to those derived facts. So why did we use, why do we maybe still use this method of time tests if it's not truly assessing fluency? Are students playing the game where they pass it on Friday and the application then is gone on Monday? They did what they needed to do and now they're done. They can check that. Oh, I got my sevens. Done. Now I'm going to go on to my eights. And like I said earlier, is there any math anxiety involved? That was me. And I did. I played the game. I got through what I needed to get through. But I can't still use it now. So here's two scenarios. Tommy is taking his weekly multiplication test. Although he has learned many easier multiplication facts, Tommy still struggles to remember his sevens, and he is very aware of his weakness. Once again, he compensates by skipping around and answering the facts he knows. Then he quietly puts his hands under his desk to help him count to answer the remaining unknown facts. He has learned that he can usually finish the test in time by doing this, and his teacher is therefore convinced he knows his facts. Ellie feels her heart start to race when the teacher announces it's time to start the weekly addition fact time test. Even though Ellie excels at reading, writing, and solving even the most challenging story problems, as soon as the timer starts, she draws a blank. She struggles to remember the facts she knows well and is so distracted by the timer that she can't apply her favorite strategies to tougher addition facts like 7 plus 8. With tears in her eyes, she once again turns in her paper, incomplete, and tells her friends, "I'm just so bad at math." Her teacher's puzzled. She's seen Ellie's automaticity with addition facts many times through math games. She doesn't understand why it doesn't translate to the test. So, interactive games with opportunities for conversations. I have found that even my friends, my students who are hesitant and unsure, feel safe enough to attempt to answer something. And then we are neighbor loving and supporting them to get their thinking to be fully and complete. So one thing that Graham Fletcher will have you do is, instead of here's a 1 minute time test on 10, how to make 10, ask them, how many equations can you write that equal 10? And kids that want that challenge feel challenged to see how many they can get. And kids that know one feel successful because they solidly know one and they can be proud of that. Okay, so his building fact fluency kit is built in a way that you work with an image talk, an anchor problem, tool talks, conceptualized practice problems, number talks, and then games for practice. So I'm going to break this down and show you. I didn't want to put all of the pictures in the slides because it can just get so to be so much. So he has a great online where you can flip through and put it on your projector, your smart board online. Or he has them in little booklets like this that you just flip through if you're doing small group or intervention. There's a teammate at school that does this. She doesn't use her smart board. She just shows the pictures through the thing like this. So the image talk will use concrete everyday objects that kids know and recognize to start building their concepts that they're looking at. So the big words, and we use this all the time, what do you notice? What do you wonder? This week, we were doing combinations for 10. So it started with yellow and green buttons. And we've been doing this for several weeks. So at the beginning, when we say, what do you notice, what do you wonder, anything flies, right? They can tell you anything they want. But I also know that kids can take this farther, right? So I told them, the number of holes in the buttons do not matter. Because they'll say, oh, that one has 4 buttons. Then we got to this picture. Oh, this one looks like a snake. It's all curled up, right? Yes, let's get those out of the way. Let's use these things. But now let's look at it as mathematicians. So he has it set up. I know as the teacher that we're looking for combinations for 10. But I don't tell them that, right? We discover that together. So we'll look at the buttons. Got to figure out which way these go. I'll show them this one, and I'll say, what do you notice? What do you wonder? So I'll ask you, what do you notice? What do you wonder?
One yellow.
There's one yellow.
Nine green.
Nine green.
They're organized in 5 groups.
Ooh, you have groups of 5. And then I might say, you're right, that's a tense frame. Right? So if we know there's 5 on top and 5 on bottom, how many do we know we have? 10. Then we'll go to the next one. What do you notice? What do you wonder?
3 yellow, 7 green.
2 groups of 5. Still 10 buttons. What did they change?
Color sizes.
I couldn't hear you. Can you say that again?
Color and sizes.
Okay. The color has changed. Maybe the size of buttons has changed. What do you notice? What do you wonder? What do you notice? What do you wonder? And eventually, I'll ask them, what number sentence could we write to match this picture? So then I'm writing the addition sentence, so that part gets going with them too. And I'll just write it on my smart board underneath. Oh, 3 and 7 make 10. And then we'll flip through. Then this one was, there was a turnaround fact, right? Then it was 7 and 3, so we'll talk about it being a turnaround fact. Wait, how do you know? How do you know that's a turnaround fact? And then we'll ask at the end, what happened? There's 9 and 1. Every time, we were always making what number? 10. We were always making 10. So sometimes we'll record it on a chart paper. Sometimes they'll turn and talk. I have peanut butter and jelly partners. So they'll turn and talk to their peanut butter and jelly partners. So everyone is interacting, but there's no right or wrong answer. I might guide them one way or another, like the number of holes in the button doesn't really matter. But if that's the first thing you notice, super. Okay? So we're looking at what's happening each time, what's the same, what's different with the concrete object that they're familiar with. So they'll have buttons, seashells, apples, markers, eggs, because then this picture stays in their head. And when we go to apply it later in the number talk or the conceptualized practice problem, they have a concrete object to pull from. So the anchor problems are set within this context. It uses the story. Sally has 10 buttons. 6 are green, the rest are yellow. How many are yellow? And then we'll start talking, but they have this visual in their mind of the 10 buttons, and they'll go from there. It's also great because it's open-ended. We'll ask them, how do you know? How can you prove that to me? What's happening in this story? Then the tool talk is very similar to the image talk, except for this time, it's a math tool that we use. Dice, dominoes, tens frames with red and green chips. And we're doing the exact same thing with a math manipulative. So those friends that this seems way too hard, way too much to get a grasp on, start with the buttons, and then you can make the connection from the buttons here to the red and yellow chips. The story problems always come back to the context, and the number talks are always after. That's where you're maybe looking a little more for the automaticity part. So this is that picture from my classroom. So it said, Robin has. Then you can see 10, 20, and 30 underneath. This is how Graham does an amazing job of differentiating it. So after we've walked through it together, eventually I'm going to give them this blank paper. And I tell them, you get to pick what number you put in the box. So you can challenge yourself if you want to have a challenge. Or they can stay in that spot that they feel safe, if that's what they want to do. So we went through it together. We started with 10. Robin has 10 buttons. 6 are yellow and the rest are green. How many green buttons does Robin have? Gave them time. We were just at the carpet this time. I didn't have copies made, so we worked through it together. So then we talked. Okay, if she has 6, this is a part whole. I know she has 10. That's my whole. I know she has 6 yellow. But now my other part is missing. How many are green? We talked through how to solve that. If I have 6, seven, eight, nine, ten. Oh, four more. She has four green. Exactly. Well, let's try 20. So we tried 20. And then a boy raised his hand and he said, Mrs. Huntercook, I know that it's 14. I said, well, how do you know? What did you do as a mathematician? And he said, well, I know to get from 10 to 20 is 10 more. So I took that 10 more and I added it to the 4 to get to 14. Yeah, you're exactly right. Well, let's try this one. Let's put 30 in that box. And they were just going to town. And eventually they were, we're counting by tens. We're counting by tens. We are counting by tens. You're right. So then my 6 and 7 year old first graders counted from 4 to 104 by 10 because they were recognizing the pattern. When we started with the buttons. And sure, my kids can be really great at math, but I truly believe that this is set up in such a way for students to succeed because they understand the relationship of these numbers. The 6 stayed the same. I'm always looking for that way to make 10. And then his games. I do math rotations in my classroom so that I can differentiate what I'm teaching to what group based on the concept, the skill that we're covering. So they were there with me in a small group. They have a technology small group and then an independent work time group that they rotate through. So when they're at that independent time, we do their worksheet or whatever task that I want to see that they're doing independently. And then when they're done with that, they get to play these games. So I take the time to introduce the games and then I'll rotate them out. They usually have 3 options of the games that they can choose to play with. But once again, it's just continuing to build their math fact fluency. So a lot of them I'll just print on cardstock to make it a little more fun than just black and white. The kit comes with a few that are like on a shinier paper, but not all of them. So online he's got a ton of them. But this combinations to 10 can start with number match. So he has these cards, these decks of cards. There's 3 sets. The first one's just a 5 frame, so they do number matches on 5 frames. So there's A through M, I think he has, so then you can gather the cards together based. I mean, it's organized in a very teacher-friendly way. You can gather the ones for the deck that you need back. But then they just flip the card, figure out how many are in this 5 frame, find that number on the board, and cover it. You're always, always looking for 4 in a row, whether it's up and down, vertical, diagonal. The goal is 4 in a row. And it's really fun because when students start grasping that strategy of trying to block you to make sure they get 4 in a row first, because that's how you win, you know, then they're looking at. Usually you'll flip 2. So the blue cards are 10 frames. So usually how the game is played is they'll flip 2. Then they have to choose, do they want to cover an 8 or do they want to cover the 1? So that's where that strategy of trying to get 4 in a row comes in really well, or to block their partner to not get 4 in a row. They have that choice. They have to look through what all of their options are. When I was tutoring this summer, I made them stop and look and decide what both options were. Sometimes it went to writing the number sentence that would match so that I knew that they were truly not just like going for the easiest one, but working through all of them. So we'll talk through. So there's a tens frame match. Then it'll go one more or one less. So then they'll flip two cards, and they can't cover the 9 or the 1. They have to cover the 8 or the 0 or the 7 and the 2. So they have to go one more, one less. They're always building on that skill. So it goes up until doubles. The one we're doing this next week, he also does a lot with dice. So if you're not using cards, you're using dice. And he differentiates with 6-sided dice or 10-sided dice. So then you'll roll a dice, and it's 4. So this is the teens game. You're doing 10 and some more. So I can make 14. So I have to find a whole 10 frame that's filled and a 10 frame that has 4 more to recognize the 20 frame, how you would see 14. And they love them. I was a little worried, to be honest, that the concept of the game, always doing 4, always trying to get 4 in a row, would get old and they would get sick of it. But it truly let their brains not worry about how to win and how to play, and let their brains really focus on the concept, the math skill that we are trying to build. Okay, so practice should always be broken into separate times that are set out. I do image talks, anchor talks, conceptualized practice problems every day as my math warm-up, no matter what skill. We use everyday math for the time being. We're reviewing math right now, and it's very cyclical. So everyday math covers literally 4 to 5 skills a day. So it doesn't always necessarily match up with what I'm teaching for the math lesson. But this math warm-up is how I always start, with building fact fluency. And then, like I said, I put those games in the independent practice time once I've taught them, so that they can just grab and go and then play these skills once they finished that. So he has a great scope and sequence. So like, this is the combinations for 10 with the buttons. So all of his image talks are here. He has it organized in a fantastic way. The anchor problem, the tool talks, the conceptualized practice problems, which you really get to practice everything. So you do addition and subtraction based on the result I know, and you're finding the answer or the missing addend, a part-part whole, and comparing. So he has a lot of great options for what to do with that, but he has it all organized in a great way. Then the number talks look like this. My sub was doing this today. So she would say something like, okay, remember when we looked at those buttons and some were yellow and some were green? What was happening every time? We always had how many buttons? And we'd pull back on that knowledge. And then I say, okay, thinking about those buttons, thinking about those tens frames, can you answer this now? If you had 10 and 6 of them were yellow, how many more were green? And we're looking for that automaticity because we've been doing this every day. And then it goes, oh, if I know 10 minus 6 is 4, what's 4 plus 6? And they're getting to that point, oh, look, there's the turnaround fact. And we're answering these questions. Oh, here's the pacing guide. Okay, so he has an addition and subtraction kit, and he also has developed a multiplication and division kit if you teach upper grades. He has a 3-year pacing guide if it starts in kindergarten and you do kindergarten first and second. He has it broken up by strategy, broken up if you do K-1-2, saying, oh, maybe you just have it for kindergarten and first. This is a pacing guide you could follow. Or, oh, you just have it for first and second. This is a pacing guide. Or first grade last year was the only one doing this at my school. So we went with the 1-year pacing guide option D and just hit it hard, right? Let's figure this thing out. But now we have teachers in kindergarten that are starting to use it, and teachers in second grade that are starting to use it. So we can adjust our pacing guide. So I just, as a teacher, really appreciated that too, because then there's a scope and a sequence no matter who's doing it with you, or how many kids that you have, or where you are at a school. So the image talks, the tool talks, the number talks are my warm-up. Like I said, they take 8 to 10 minutes, 3 to 4 to 5 times a week, and it's spread out. The anchor problems, the conceptualized practice problems, can take up to 20 because I'm giving them the paper, and I'm saying, show me what you know. And they get to choose what strategy to use. They get to choose what number they want to put in the box that they feel comfortable with or are ready for a challenge. So then the assessments, you know, like that's the big thing. Well, how do I know that they know it? A lot is observation. A lot is in those, what do you notice? What do you wonder? So with the image talk and the number talk and the anchor problems. So you can go through that. You can do student interviews. Can you tell me what 6 plus 4 is? How do you know? Watch how they solve it. Did they have to count on their fingers? Did they have to get objects to count? Those papers that I print out, I keep to see. Because it's also interesting in a conceptualized practice problem if they get it wrong. And I can see where their thinking went. This is just an example of an interview you could ask them. So I was looking up how much building fact fluency kit is, because we were blessed. There was a grandma from our school who was a first grade teacher for many years, and when she passed away last year, her children came back and said she would want some money to go to first grade because she loved first grade. So we were blessed to get more kits. So I actually didn't know how much they cost. So I went looking. It's $570 for the kit, which is a lot. It was just bought by Zahner Blizzard. It was brand new. Mm-hmm. Which all I think of is handwriting, so it seems math is a little strange, but it was just bought by that. But that's a lot of money, right? And it comes with a lot of really great things. But here's how you can do it without the money, or without the kit specifically. Steve Weinborne is a teacher, a mathematician that has a lot of image talks up there. I mean, you can even just like Google markers and see how you can, you know, put markers together to make sets of 5 and start there. Like just thinking outside of the box. These books by Greg Tang are fantastic. Like let's put this literature in front of them that's getting kids to think outside of the box. Graham Fletcher has these 3-act. Before he created Math Fact Fluency, he was putting all of these things together where they were watching a short video of the shells on the beach, and then trying to estimate how many shells are in the bucket based on what they saw in the video. Steve Weinborne has a lot of estimisteries that my kids love, estimation clipboards where it will give them clues and they'll have to work through. These splats are really great because 19 is the total. But if we can see 2, 4, 6, 7, how many are hidden under the splat then to get to 19? So there's a lot of options that we started with before we had the building fact fluency kit to get us going somewhere and building their understanding before we just were blessed with these kits. And now because it's made such a difference, then other grade levels are starting to try to budget and find funds to purchase them themselves because they want to keep it going. They've seen the benefit of it. Okay, so thinking, what do you hope to try? How has your thinking changed? What are you still wondering? If we had tables, I would have loved to pass out games and had you play to see what they're like. As a teacher, I really appreciate on the back side of the game board, he tells you the instructions, but then also gives you an example. The student did this, these are the choices. So a lot of times when I have parent volunteers come in, they're the ones that teach this because I feel like it's set up in a way that no matter who's teaching the kids how to play it, they can read it and figure it out. So if you want to come look closer at these things, please come up. Yes.
I just ordered a sample kit for free.
Ooh.
Do you have any tips for if I wish I had known then, if I had known this, I would have done this differently?
I think I would have started sooner. It can be very overwhelming, right? And this is a lot to think through an image talk and all of these things. And I would have started sooner.
If you were going to break it down and start with one part, would you start with the image talk?
I would start with the image talk because that is the concrete objects that you can even just pull out of your cupboard to talk through with. Absolutely, I would start.
Is anybody using the multiplication and division? I
don't want to know. Yes. So our math interventionist is using it. And she's the one that brought this to school. She also teaches at the local university math classes in the education department. I don't know how she found it, but she found it and brought it, thankfully. So she's using it as intervention. I'm not aware of any classroom teacher that is sold on it yet. Because once you get going, and the routine is the same, just the pictures change. But I don't know if they're using it yet or not in the classroom.
What is the name of the kit?
Building Fact Fluency. BFF.
So this is your curriculum then?
No. Mm-mm. This is just our warm-up. This is what we do every day to start math. When we come in from recess, we have everyday math as our curriculum for now.
So you say for now, but then are you hoping to use this more, or this is just always a warm-up?
This is just solely for building fact fluency. We're reviewing math this year to get a new math curriculum. So next year we will have a new math curriculum. I don't know what it will be yet, but I will still be using this.
Gotcha.
Absolutely.
Can you just start with the first concept and just work your way down?
So he... he'll tell you this is the pacing guide. And we found, sometimes it legit lines up with what we're actually going to be teaching for that math skill. Amazingly, which was not planned. But he'll just say, the very first thing you do is sums within 5 is the skill. You're looking at crayons is the Image Talks. And then if you're just doing it for 1 year, he breaks it up into 2 weeks. And he'll go through and say, okay, week one, you're going to introduce it with the 3-act math, and that's the video. So they're watching and talking about what's happening. You do the image talk, the anchor problem, the tool talk. The CPP stands for conceptualized practice problem. And the type is JRU, which means joint result unknown. You're adding and you're trying to figure out how many total you have. It tells you what game to use. Then if you go to week two, you'll do a second tool talk, a second conceptualized practice problem, and you'll go through. Now, as we've been planning, I'm blessed to be a team of 5 sections. I'm 1 of 5, so we'll go through and say we might not always get to that number talk 1-1, or we might not always get to the CPP problem, but through the 2 weeks, we'll at least hit 1 image talk, 1 number, or 1 tool talk, 1 conceptualized practice problem to try to go through. But they honestly, once the kids get the rhythm and routine, it doesn't take long because they know what's expected and they're ready to answer. What do you notice? What do you wonder? And the ball just gets rolling. Yeah.
Do you ever do a written type test anymore? Or have you completely gone away from that?
I said, see you later. And I'm blessed to have an admin that supports that. There is nothing, I think if you talk to my students or the first graders, they would show you their understanding. When we do the conceptualized practice problem, I should have brought them some, so you can print it. And I'll give this to my students, and I can clearly see if they're understanding it or not. When I tutored or when I do a small group, I literally would draw a line down this way. And we would do this one completely together. We'd put 2 up there. We'd solve it. We'd use a strategy like a tense frame or a number line or counting on. And we would talk through explicitly what to do. Then we'd go to the 12 and I'd step back a little bit, but still guide them through how would we solve this. Let's make sure we are getting to the right answer. And then I have them do the 22 independently, because if they're picking up on the pattern, they totally could. And it was amazing, these kids who needed math tutoring because they were below going into second grade. Math was hard for them. They could solve that. Yes?
Now, you've taught both ways, your math curriculum,
yes.
Right, before and after.
Yes.
Did you see a difference in students attacking your math curriculum when you use this? Did it become easier to them?
Yeah. I just gave our Unit 2 math assessment on Tuesday before I came here, and I was correcting them on the airplane and looking at the ways they were solving their, we always have a story problem at the end. I, could not stop myself from smiling because I was like, they get it. They're getting it. And the way that they're proving it. And there'd be times before, even last year, when it was like, half the time the story problem was left undone. Or they just couldn't. They were so exhausted. I mean, that sounds like it's a really long math assessment. It wasn't, but their brains were just so tired by the time they got to that point, they were done. I don't see that this year. The fatigue isn't there. They're confident in what they're showing. Yeah, it's super fun.
Then ultimately, it will eventually be a time saver.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's play this game. Let's actually play these games that are going to help build your understanding and practice instead of, here's this 1-minute time test that now I then have to grade and decide, did you pass? Did you not pass? Which one are you going to do next time? And figuring out that. Any other questions? Yes.
How much time would you say doing this has added on to your math section or math curriculum for the day?
I mean, you go fast at the beginning to go, or you go slow at the beginning to go fast, right? But it really is at the, I don't really pay attention to the time. But I would say at the very most 15 minutes. Like, it literally is just my warm-up. And then we're going on. It hasn't ever felt like it's become this huge thing. Does that help?
Yeah.
So. Yes.
Do you have any multiplication and division examples?
No, I can't access it because I don't have the kit because I don't use it. But there is a multiplication. I got to figure out where. There is a multiplication and division specific.
Right.
One. So if you ordered a free sample, I don't know, maybe you could do that for the multiplication and division too.
That's what I did. I ordered the multiplication.
Oh, you ordered the multiplication and division.
Done.
Super. Then you can present next year and tell us how it goes. And then one more plug. This doesn't have to do with math back to Lindsay, but like I said, I go to a conference much like this. So the last session, 3:30. I'm presenting at Kiva Planks, and we're literally just playing. With these blocks and puzzle solving. So if you want an interactive one that is literally playing, I'll see you there.
Which one?